First, for weeks now, the search for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 has had rescue workers and concerned citizens scouring the oceans with a fine-tooth comb, looking for signs of the plane.
There have been plenty of objects sighted off the Australian coast, but they often turn out to be things like discarded fishing equipment, cargo container parts, and everyday trash. Turns out there's a lot of junk in our oceans, and the search for the plane is shining a spotlight on that problem.
Joining us now to talk about it is Eric Galbraith, assistant professor in the Department of Earth and Planetary Science at McGill University. Eric, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much. It's nice to be here.
Well, ocean trash isn't a new problem, but it happens to be in the spotlight right now thanks to the missing Flight 370. As someone who studies the world's oceans, how worried are you about the amount of trash floating around out there?
I mean, as somebody who enjoys the oceans, I've always been troubled by the amount of trash that we see on beaches, and it's becoming more and more common to see it out in the open ocean. So, I mean, I'm definitely, it's always been an aesthetic problem for me. We're making it messy, and it's not the beautiful place that it once was. And I'm becoming more and more concerned, actually, about the effects that this may be having on the marine ecosystem as the plastic becomes something that's consumed more and more regularly by all kinds of animals in the ocean without really a very good idea of what the effect is on the animals.
And it goes all the way up the food chain to humans, if I understand it, because you know, the fish, the little fish will eat the plastic, bigger fish eat those fish, and then we eat the fish, so the plastic ends up right back in us.
Exactly. I mean, I think humans are probably usually pretty good at making sure that we don't eat the plastic pieces directly, but I mean, we've actually, it's been found that of animals like seals that, you know, don't cut their fish open and clean them carefully before they eat them, they actually get even large pieces of plastic that are consumed directly. That's been found to happen in seal populations. And that, speaking of plastic that you can see, there's also the problem of microscopic plastic particles that you can't see, which are just becoming a pervasive part of the global environment.
And it's probably hard to determine how much trash is in the oceans, evidently a lot, but do we have a general estimate about how much is out there?
Well, it's difficult, actually. So we know how much plastic we produce. People around the world now produce something like 300 million metric tons of plastic every year. So just to put that in perspective, that's about 90 pounds of plastic per person on the planet. So people in Western societies like us consume much more plastic than that per person.
Wait,
per
was
year.
That per year? 90
per
pounds
year.
Of plastic a 90 year.
90 pounds of plastic per person per year. So that's a lot of plastic. And where is it going? Well, we don't really have a great idea for where it all ends up. Some of it is in heavy plastic that certainly ends up in landfills, but a lot of it is in light plastic items, you know, bottles, different kinds of food packaging. And that stuff is much more easily blown or washed by rivers into the ocean. So people estimate usually something like 5%, perhaps, of all the plastic that's produced ends up going into the ocean just because it's downstream from everywhere. So if it gets into the water system, it ends up in the ocean. But when we actually go out in the ocean to try and measure the amount of plastic that's out there, we'd usually find concentrations that are much smaller than this. So to measure the concentration of plastic that's actually there, you need to take a net. You need to take some kind of a net out on a ship and drag that net through the water. And then you bring the net onto the ship and empty out what's caught in the end of it. And then you can count it on a screen or look at it in a microscope. And people have been doing these surveys in the parts of the oceans where plastic has been collecting most heavily. And they find that the concentrations there are actually much less than you would guess, given how much plastic we think is going into the ocean. So this means it must be breaking down into particles that are too small to be caught in the nets, so microscopic plastics, and some amount must be passing through the food chain and sinking down into the deep ocean.
I was going to ask you about the deep ocean now. We know about some of the garbage. They've been called garbage islands in these gyres, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But what else might get to the bottom? What sort of trash or what other things might be down at the depth?
Well, plastic can sink. There are different kinds of plastic, and they have different densities. So some of that plastic tends to, you know, it really floats, so it stays up at the surface. It's really hard to push it down. But other plastic is dense enough that it can sink, and especially if it's biofouled. So that means if there are ocean plants and animals that grow on the plastic. I mean, there are no surfaces available in most of the ocean, which is actually kind of difficult for life. So when organisms in the water find a surface that they can grow on, they colonize it, and that can make it heavier and help it to sink. So there's certainly a rain of plastic. You know, you can imagine it snowing down through the ocean towards the abyssal, the dark abyssal ocean. And we don't have a way to quantify that. We're not really sure how much of that is going on.
In terms of what exactly is floating out there, what are the most common things that are polluting the ocean?
Well, there's, if you go out and look, there are lots of plastic bottles, plastic bags, especially in coastal areas. When you get further offshore, those things tend to be broken down into smaller fragments. One of the kinds of big objects that you find a lot out in the open ocean is pieces of fishing gear. So there's just always fishermen losing nets in bad weather or abandoning nets if they get too badly tangled to use anymore. And because they have floats on them, those nets, called ghost nets, can wander around the ocean for many years. There's also some amount of garbage that's thrown off of ships. Hopefully this is decreasing now. There's new legislation to make it illegal to throw plastics and dangerous forms of garbage overboard of ships, even in international waters. But for many years, it was perfectly acceptable to throw your garbage overboard, and so some of that is still hanging around in the ocean. And there's also garbage that is cargo that was being carried on ships in the open ocean and was lost in storms. So there's always cargo being lost from ships in storms. It's also contributing to garbage in the high seas.
I'd heard that hospital waste tended to be a big problem at one point. Is that still as big an issue today?
It could be. I don't know.
Now, the gyres are something that's gotten a lot of publicity. They've been called, I think, the Pacific one, Garbage Island, sort of these big swirling funnels of garbage that float on the top of the water. Can you tell us about those and where they are and how big that problem is?
Sure. So gyres are an important part of the global ocean circulation. So seawater is always circulating around the ocean, just like, you know, the blood circulates around in our bloodstream. And, you know, our blood is moved around by our heart beating, whereas the ocean is moving around because winds are blowing over the ocean. Now, the way the winds usually blow over the ocean, they blow east over some parts of the ocean and west over other parts of the ocean. And if there were no continents in the world, then the ocean would circulate like Jupiter. I don't know if you've seen pictures of Jupiter, but there are just these bands of clouds that circle around it like rings. But because we've got continents on the world and on the Earth that block the water so it can't just flow around in bands with the wind, instead it circles around. And so you get in each ocean basin a giant, you know, slowly swirling circular current, and that's called a gyre. And so there are five big gyres in the world. There's two in the Atlantic, two in the Pacific, and one in the Indian Ocean. Now, the reason this becomes interesting for thinking about garbage is because as the water swirls around in those gyres, it swirls gradually towards the center. So we say it converges. So there's a convergence of water in the gyres towards the middle. And because the plastic floats, for the floating part of the plastic anyway, the floating plastic is moved gradually towards the centers of the gyres. Then when the water reaches the centers, it piles up and actually goes down. So the water itself, when it converges in the center, flows downward. You know, it flows down a few hundred feet into the ocean. But because the plastic is floating, it's left behind at the surface. So the overall effect you can think of as being something like one of the filters maybe you have in your bathtub, where as the water drains out through the filter in the bathtub drain, the filter catches all of the hairs and whatever other debris there was in the bath. So in the same kind of way, the gyres concentrate the plastics.
So if we've got these concentrated plastic funnels going on in these gyre areas, why can't we go with a very fine, very large net and scoop up the plastic and clean up the ocean?
Yes, that would be great if they were concentrated enough. However, the convergence isn't, I mean, it's not quite like a filter in the bathtub because it's happening over a very large area. So instead of this being, you know, something like the size of Manhattan, which would be a nice, easy size to deal with if the garbage were that concentrated, instead, it's like the whole size of the Midwest.
Hmm.
So it's spread over such a huge area. There's only a piece of plastic every foot or a couple feet, and they're small pieces. So going out to clean it up is just impossible. It would be much too expensive.
We're talking right now with Eric Galbraith about the amount of trash and other junk in the world's oceans and what, if anything, we can do about it. And you can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. Have you seen this problem firsthand? Are you concerned about it? And what would you like to see done? You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking to Eric Galbraith of McGill University about all of the trash in the world's oceans. It's an issue that's been highlighted by the search for the missing Malaysian Airlines plane. A lot of times, suspected pieces of airline debris turn out to be floating pieces of junk. You can join the conversation with your thoughts and your questions at 800-642-1234. What do you think our responsibility is when it comes to dealing with trash in the ocean, the trash that's already there, or keeping trash from getting into the ocean in the first place? Call 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
So, Eric, if we can't easily clean up the oceans, we can't trawl it with a big net and get all the plastic and the junk out of there, what can we do both at a legislative and a personal level to help clean up the oceans?
Well, there's really two things that can be done as far as I can see. One is that we can we can change the plastics that we're using to have plastics that don't last as long under the conditions out there in the ocean. So, I mean, there's a lot of sunlight in the ocean, which can help to break down plastic. But a lot of the plastics that we use are much more durable than they need to be. So they'll last for many centuries out in the ocean, whereas probably we just need some kind of biodegradable plastic that could break down within a few months. So that's one big thing we can do, just switch to shorter plastic lifetimes. But then on a more bigger level, I think what we really need to do is just try and think more about the production of stuff. We need to try and organize our economies in a way that produces less disposable stuff. So whether that means changing our buying habits, our consumption habits, or just the way we value things, just to try and go to, overall, a lower consumption lifestyle.
And I want to go to our phones now. We have Chris joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, yep.
What did you want to say? Go ahead.
I wonder if you have any idea what percentage of trash is from natural disasters like the tsunamis or the tidal waves that come into land and then sweep everything back out.
All right, good question. Thanks a lot, Chris. And what about tsunamis, other natural disasters that might be contributing?
Yeah, great question. So that definitely leads to hotspots. So after the big Japanese tsunami, there was a huge amount of garbage washed into the ocean. People ran computer models to see where this garbage spread, and it's spread across the whole Pacific Ocean in some cases. So, you know, locally, for short periods of time, that is a big source of trash. It doesn't dominate over the long term. It's more dispersed garbage sources from all over the planet.
Mm.
But definitely that's a really dramatic instance whenever that happens.
Well, thank you for that question, Chris. And Eric, you were talking about how we need to move to a mindset where we make less stuff and we don't package. We have disposable or more biodegradable plastics. And that made me think of I think it was a year or so ago, SunChips introduced a biodegradable SunChip bag. And I remember getting one and thinking that it was loud. And that's what everyone else thought, that it was too loud. And then it was very crinkly. And so SunChips stopped making it because it was too loud. So it just makes me think, is this something that people are behind? Or if they're worried about a loud SunChip bag, is there the will there to do even more drastic things, to reduce consumption, to move to different plastics? Are people behind this enough?
Well, yeah, I hadn't been aware of that example. That's a good one. No, I mean, I think globally across the world, unfortunately, we're not right now. But that doesn't mean that we won't be. I mean, I think we make choices every day based on how we value different experiences, how we think about the future, and I think there needs to be a value shift in order for us to start doing these things. And it's really about making plans for the future. There's a shift among some industries, some companies, for example, the refrigerator industry in Europe, to think about the full lifetime of a refrigerator that they build. So rather than just produce something thinking about its useful lifetime, you plan for what's going to happen at the end of the useful lifetime of that object. And so these refrigerator companies are now, they're actually required to plan for eventually taking the fridge back when the users are finished with it, when nobody wants it anymore, and then recycling it, turning it into new products so that it doesn't just end up as garbage, which can last for forever, for many hundreds of years. So in a way, I mean, I kind of think about it like cleaning up my kitchen. I have a sink full of dirty dishes at home right now that I have to go home and deal with. But I kind of feel like, it's the same thing globally with this trash that we've been generating. We've just been generating more and more dirty dishes, and we're not cleaning them. And it just becomes difficult to deal with. So it's a mindset to plan ahead for the garbage that we know we're going to generate, and have a way either for to let it break down on its own, or for it to be manageable so that we can deal with it.
Well, you mentioned that being, an example of a value shift that needs to happen, but I guess the million-dollar question is, what is it going to take for people to have a collective value shift as a conservationist, someone who's worried about the ocean? What will it take?
Yeah, that's a great question. If you figure out the answer, please let me know.
Yeah, so you mentioned the example of people looking at the lifespans of appliances in Europe. Do you see people in the United States at the vanguard sort of thinking the same way?
It's definitely coming. I mean, here in Quebec, where I live, the fridge thing has started to happen here as well. They're trying to do it for other appliances. So starting first with, large household appliances that have a lot of steel that's easy to recycle. Here also in Quebec, actually, they've banned plastic bags in stores being given away for free. So you can have a plastic bag in the store, but you have to pay for it under law. So you always have to pay 5 cents for a plastic bag. So, that's having an impact on how many plastic bags people use in a big way, because these things don't really make people's lives particularly better, but they do generate an awful lot of trash, and that trash always ends up somewhere.
Do you think part of it that's difficult is just the size of the ocean? It's sort of like contemplating the universe. You can't really do it. The oceans are immense, and we think, if a bottle goes in the ocean, if there's some trash there, the oceans are gigantic, and it's just hard for people to wrap their mind around that kind of size.
Absolutely. That's definitely a part of it. I mean, when you're out on the ocean, it seems to extend forever, and it's a surprise for me, actually, that we've been able to put so much garbage into the ocean that it's now becoming a problem. But it's just, there's a lot of people on the planet, and we're all very busy and, generating stuff, and the stuff is accumulating. And unfortunately, because we're not dealing with our trash properly, it's starting to really fill up the planet to a point where it's interfering with searches for crashed jet airplanes.
Now, you mentioned earlier that one of the things that's keeping you up at night is worrying about the effects of pollution and trash in the oceans on marine animals, marine life. What are some of the big unanswered questions there?
Well, so for some animals, like seabirds, it's pretty clear that they will eat plastic because they don't recognize what it is. They'll eat it, and then it can get in their guts. And if the pieces of plastic are so big that they can't get out again, then they can actually fill up their guts and this can slow them down and prevent them from eating enough, and which can actually lead to death. For smaller animals, it's much more mysterious. It's hard to observe the small animals in the ocean, like the zooplankton, things like small jellies, like little jellyfish. All these things, we don't really know how they're being affected by all these plastic particles that are out there. It's clear that they're eating them. We find plastic particles in something like one out of every six mesopelagic fish. So these are fish that form a really important part of the food chain in the ocean. It seems that it's becoming more and more common that they all have fish, or that they all have plastic in their guts. And for these animals, we know so little about them, we don't know what it's doing to them. There's some concern that toxins, like DDT and other toxic chemicals, stick to plastics, so they can become concentrated on plastics. And then when animals eat the plastics, those toxins can come off and poison the animals as well. But again, this is a new problem, and it hasn't been particularly well studied, so there's really many more questions than there are answers right now.
Ocean trash is an issue that it doesn't get a lot of attention. There have been some documentaries and articles written about it, but right now it is a bit in the spotlight because, as you said, the search for the plane has turned up garbage on the radar when we think it's a plane of debris from the plane. But now, while people are thinking about it a little, what would you like to see people do?
Well, I mean, it'd be great to try and reduce people's plastic production. I mean, for everybody to think in their own mind about how much of a problem this is, so that maybe the next time some idea like the Sun Chips biodegradable plastic bag comes along, they'll see more of the value of having something biodegradable that's not going to end up in the ocean and potentially kill a marine animal. That will be more important to them than the fact that maybe it crinkles a little bit too loudly. I mean, I think it's okay that big problems like this take years to change, just because they have to change many people's opinions one thing at a time. But that would be one good element for me that could come out of the sad story of the Malaysian Airlines flight, if this could contribute to everybody becoming more aware of what a big problem ocean garbage is and trying to do their best just to think about ways to reduce garbage in their own lives.
Eric, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
We've been speaking to Eric Galbraith, an assistant professor in the Department of Earth and Planetary Science at McGill University.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk with a biologist who's coming to Wisconsin. She says there's a lot we can learn about nature by exploring the canopies of our forests. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.